I don't know if you can see that very well, but what I've put on the board is it's confusing enough, and I put it up there. So what I put on the board is on the left side over here is the base 10 numbers, 0 through what we call 10. And on the other side, I put base 2 numbers that represent the same quantity. If we had 10 cups of water up here or 10 pennies or whatever it was, so if you just could draw a line across there, maybe I should have put them close together. If you go all the way down, what we think, the way our minds process things and all of that, what we call 10 in a base 2 number system looks like 1010. Okay. All right. I'm not going to try to get too deep into why it's that way, other than this. Our computers only know two numbers, 0 and 1. That's all they can process. You know what 4.5 is, but a computer don't know that. If I say 4.5, then you know that's $4.50. You know that's 4.5 cups. You know how to quantify that. You know how to picture what 4.5 looks like. 4.5 don't mean nothing to a computer. It only knows 0 and 1. That's all it can think of. So it has to have a whole bunch of zeros and ones to be able to have the same equivalent of your number. All right? Completely different way of thinking. All right? So a computer, we type in 469, because that's how many dollars is we deposited from our paycheck into the account, and we're looking at numbers that say 469, but the computer from the screen that you type it in to what it does to do calculations and all of that, all of its calculations are done with a base 2 number system. Okay? And I could tell you why that does that, but I won't go into that. That's too not really profitable for our discussion this morning. But I just want us to start realizing the vast differences. So 6, for instance, in our base 10 number system, on a base 2 number system, looks like what we would call 110. But it's not 110, it's 110. All right, that's base 2 for 6. And you can only imagine what a million looks like in base 2. It's lots of ones and zeros stretched way out. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It takes me a while to sort this kind of stuff out. But anyway, what I want to talk to us today, I've been meditating and thinking about what it takes to make a marriage last. What does it take to make it last? We did some celebrating yesterday. We didn't do anything too wild or crazy, I don't feel like, but I feel like it was appropriate. I feel like it's a milestone that's worthy of saying, hey, we did something. So I think we ought to. Anybody else that gets there, I think somebody ought to help you celebrate that. So thinking about what it takes to make a marriage last. You know, there were numerous Greek, ancient Greek philosophers that viewed marriage with skepticism at best. You don't have to dig very far and you'll find out that before Christ came to this earth, that the thinkers in the Greek society that was professed to be well advanced for their time and their age, the Greeks felt like that marriage was risky. And their culture reflected that. There's a lot of wickedness that happened because they, the thinkers looked on marriage as something that was the benefits and the it was hard for them to balance out the benefits and the negative aspects of it. The Jews, on the other hand, had been taught for many generations by the time the Greeks come around. They became a very prominent thing in society. The Jews, the Israelite nation, had been taught that marriage was a good thing and that any man in particular that avoided marriage was almost classed like a murderer. If you refused to bring more children into the world, you were looked on almost like someone that took a life. Very different viewpoints. And I can tell you, this is my statement, that marriage can be very complicated and challenging to the most sincere and determined. And the reason for that is men and women don't always use the same number system. It's 10, honey. No, it's not 10. It's 1,010. And it makes perfect sense in both of their minds. All right? We don't always use the same number system. And when I think something is just 6, no, it really is 110. It's a lot bigger than you think it is. Or I might think, this is really a big deal, and she doesn't think it is. So marriage is, even if you set out on the right page, in the right frame of mind, with the right motives in mind, it becomes challenging even when you're determined. There's always something that comes up that causes you to question. And every message that I feel like I share costs me something. It cost me my time, but there's a lot of self-examination that goes in, and especially one like today, so I desire your prayers. Anytime I begin to analyze myself, I begin to question, am I living up to what I'm preaching? Do I have the right perspective? So I don't want to give you something that's distorted or non-functional. I want it to be something that's valuable and something that'll help us and not hinder us. So it's challenging at the best. Sometimes it's like to be more, maybe relative to the current generation. Sometimes it's like trying to run something that was designed to be on Windows XP on a Macintosh. It just don't work very well. You try to load it, and it don't load up. Or maybe it loads up, and then you try to open it, and the whole thing crashes. It's like, what did I do wrong? It's like it's two different operating systems. And we're that way. Men and women have two different operating systems. I'm not saying that's bad. There are people out there that wouldn't have anything but a Mac as far as a computer. And there's other people that just will not have a Mac. And I'm not here to debate the goods and the evils of either one of them. They're out there, okay? We have to recognize that we operate different. My number system makes perfect sense to me. I believe I know why we have, everybody has accepted base 10 numbers is because I have 10 fingers. Most of us do. A few people have more and some people have some less, maybe because of accidents or something, but most all of us have 10 fingers. So I think to a great extent, that's how we got a base 10 number system. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. So I've been thinking, how do we put this all together? How do we make it work? You know, some of you here today, when I said that a computer only knows zeros and ones, that might have been a new thing for you. You may have never heard that before. You may have not known that a computer only can do calculations with a base two number system. Everything it adds, everything it multiplies, everything it divides, everything that you enter into a computer turns into a base two number. It doesn't matter if it's an A, a Z, or a question mark, it turns into a base two number. And then the computer software can only, it's very complicated, a lot of different levels to it, but it can only function with base two numbers. That's all it knows. One more tidbit on that. Maybe this will make sense. Your light switch has two positions, right? It's on or it's off. Unless you have a dimmer on it, but we won't go there. It's just on or off. And a computer is just really fast. It's not smart. Okay? It's really fast, and all it knows is on and off. And it has to have a bunch of ons and offs to do anything. Okay? So that's enough of technical talk. So I'm thinking about the components that make a marriage last. We're faced with this reality that we have different, we think about things differently. We have different operating systems. Our number systems work different. If you don't believe me, you start talking about your money and your budget, and you'll find out that your number systems are different. You start talking about the things that are important in life, and you'll find out you have different operating systems. There are things that are really, really important to the wife that the husband don't see the point. And he has to try to come to some level of understanding so there can be compassion and there can be some cohesiveness in it, because ultimately when a marriage fails and it dissolves, which happens way too often in our world today, and it's not God's plan, that He wants us to, you know, He didn't make us to be at odds. He made us to complement one another. That's what He made us for. And if He'd have made us to just always agree and be able to see everything from the same perspective, then He wouldn't have made anything but one gender. But He didn't do it that way. He made us male and female. And he put something, he designed us to where there is a inherent attraction, but yet he put some laws in place, and people out there that are philosophers want to debate this now, but and they always have, the Greeks did, the validity of trying to put these two operating systems together that don't really always match up, trying to put them together for a long period of time. But God did intend that, because there is something that comes out of that that's powerful. All right? So we've got to find out, in my mind, we've got to find out, how do we make it last? We all know, those of us here that are adults, we all know how the attraction happens. We all know the things that causes us to become interested in that other operating system, the other number system, whatever. We know what causes that. And we understand that to some level of degree, but as time goes on, we realize that we need to know how to make this last. Because when it don't last, we find society collapses. That's what happened to the Greeks, isn't it? That's what's happened to other societies when marriage that God designed, it was from the beginning, God designed it from the beginning, and when it collapses, then society crumbles around it. It's just, it's an unfortunate fact in reality. So I want to talk about four things with the help of the Lord that I believe are components to making a marriage last. The first one is reasons. Reasons. So we all have some reasons for doing things that we do. And I have a reason for getting up every morning. But I'm going to tell you, reasons are like really, really thin chicken noodle soup. There's a little flavor there, but there's not a lot of substance in reasons. Hear me out. You know, one of the reasons that some people stay in marriage is there's a reason of fear. There's a fear of failure without the other spouse. There might be a fear of the rebuke of society or family. And the rebuke of both of those have kind of faded out of the picture. So it's no wonder that marriages fail more now than they ever have. But one of the reasons that people have is there's a reason of fear. I'm afraid to not stay married. There was a time that for a woman to not stay in the marriage would be almost sure financial destruction. There's a reason of shame. The reproach of failing is just too much to face. So shame can be a reason. But on the other hand, the shame can really be a cover-up for amount of pride. Too proud to admit that I haven't learned how to operate with someone else's operating system. I haven't learned how to merge the two together. Another reason sometimes is worship. One spouse can worship the other one. And just they never do come to really being able to function like they should and be component and a what would you say, a an asset to one another. Instead, it's just worship and adoration, and they never come to work together. But it's a reason. It's a reason. You know, we need some reason to make the marriage last. We need some reason. We need a little bit of fear. A little bit of fear of the impact it'll have on ourselves. The impact that it'll have on society. A little bit of fear of the impact it'll have on our family. We need to have some fear of that. You know, some people say, well, the reason we're still together is because of the children. You know, that's really, really thin, isn't it? It's a reason, but it's thin. It don't bring a lot of real satisfaction and joy, does it? You know, all reasons, this is a point I want us to remember, all reasons are internal. They're from self. And they can help us be successful, but they're not very blessed. I can have a reason for sticking it out, but it's not a blessed reason. So I want us to dig a little deeper. The second point I'd like for us to think about is commitment. In Psalms, the 15th Psalm and the 4th verse, the whole Psalm is good, but specifically verse 4, the psalmist here says, maybe we'll read a little bit above that. We'll get over here. Verse 1 says, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? So the tone of this psalm is asking a question of, I'm going to say it in my words, who is going to be acceptable in your sight? Or what does it take to meet your expectations, Lord? And in verse 4, one of the things he says is the second half of the verse is what I really want to focus on. But he says, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. And here is an answer to the question of what does it take to be acceptable before the Lord? He says, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. Did you know when you take a vow that you might say, swearing to stay true to that vow, and sometimes you're swearing to your own hurt. I remember very distinctly standing in the little room. It was actually would be like this Sunday school room over here the day we got married. And I was in there with Brother Clifford Wilson was the one that performed the ceremony. And, you know, all of the emotions come leading up to the time of the wedding. And I was in there with my brother. And Brother Herschel stood up with us. And we were in there. And Brother Clifford had a habit of asking the groom, well, you know, this is your last opportunity to back out right here. And, I mean, we're in the room, everybody's sitting down, the crowd kind of quits talking, and they started the first song, and he turns to me and he says, well, this is your last opportunity to get out of this. And So I'm thinking, you know, I seriously thought, you know, I could be swearing to my own hurt. And now it's been 36 years later, and I'm telling you, not because I want to air dirty laundry or anything like that, but there's been some times I've wondered if I really did swear to my own hurt. Because of this number system I talked to you about, and because of this operating system that's different. You know, she was raised different than I was, and I say that, but yet we went to the same camp meetings. We saw each other as teenagers, as young people, but she operates, there's a different operating system there. It wouldn't have mattered if she grew up across the street and we went to school together all 12 years. She would have still had a different operating system. And this scripture says, Lord, who's going to be acceptable in your sight? And he said, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changes not. So I'm going to tell you something that it takes to make a marriage last, and that's commitment. There needs to be some reason. I got a reason here. I don't want the children to be hurt. Well, I'm going to tell you, that's about the thinnest chicken noodle soup you could get. There's not much nourishing. There's nothing to chew on there. Because when push comes to shove, that's just not very strong. But sometimes you can make that work. Sometimes that's what you need to make it work. But then there's commitment. Well, you know, I made a vow. I made a vow. I made a vow to her, but I made a vow before God. And the best I remember, our marriage vow said something about in the presence of all these witnesses. I don't know if you all's marriage vows said anything like that or not, but ours did. So I made a commitment to God. I made a commitment to her. I made a commitment before the people. There was a number of people at our wedding, and I was glad. It was my friends and her friends and our family, and I was thankful for everyone that was there. You know, I know something about commitment now. I thought I did then, but I really do now. And I'll know more as time goes on. Do you want to be successful? There's going to have to be a lot of commitment. The Lord said through this psalmist, David, it says it's the Psalm of David, he asked the question, well, what's it going to take to be acceptable in your sight, Lord? One of the things he said is a man that sweareth to his own hurt and changes not. I got to figure out how the same thing that looks like 6 to me looks like 110 to her. I got to figure out how to make that come together, because that don't balance. I got to figure out how to make the system work when I'm a Windows and she's an XP or she's a Macintosh or whatever it is. Does that make any sense? I got to have some commitment. It's more than a reason. It's more than I don't want so-and-so to get hurt. I don't want to disappoint mom and dad. You know, they really thought that she was the right one for me. Well, maybe so. Maybe I thought that too. I obviously did, or I wouldn't have walked down the aisle. Or stood up in front and waited for her to come down the aisle. But anyway, however it was, now there's some commitment that has to happen. I'm talking about making it last. I have to be willing to realize right now it feels like I swore to my own hurt. And that don't feel good. You ever promise to fix something for somebody and then everything in the world went wrong? I've been there. Brother Paul, you've probably been there too. Oh, I'll get this fixed before I go home. and then you drill through a whole mess of wires or something like that. You know, I remember the day we were putting a new electrical panel on the side of the chapel, and I drilled right into the power circuit and caught the building on fire. Brother Dave, do you remember that? I do. Now what are you going to do? And sometimes marriage is like that. Well, I promised that I would stick with her. I would make this work. And now here I am. I'm committed myself. I said I would. She said she would. And I just drilled into the power wire. And guess what happened? Sparks flew, caught the chips on fire, and I had a fire in the wall. Sometimes we feel like we got a fire inside of us, don't we? And we think, man, I just committed myself. I just swore to my own hurt. What am I going to do? I know what I did over there. I blew in the hole because it didn't have a fire extinguisher and blew the chips out. And then I was scrambling around how to unhook the power, and the Lord helped us, and we got the fire put out, and we fixed it. Before we went home, we had power on. That was on Saturday, and we went ahead and had church Sunday. The Lord helped us. And you know, that's what we'll find in our marriage commitment. There's going to be times that we're going to really think, I really messed up. I swore to my own hurt, and here I am. I'm having to live up to it, and this ain't no fun. I got a fire inside, and they got a fire inside, and so what do? You put gas on it? That's not very wise. It would have been the wrong thing for me to spray in WD-40 in that hole. That wouldn't have been a good thing. The Lord will help us during that time. Maybe that's enough on that one. I would like to turn to a verse over in Ephesians, the 5th chapter. I'm always challenged when I read this chapter, primarily because the Apostle Paul, that was a Jew, and he was not just any Jew, he was a dyed-in-the-wool Jew. He was taught how to be a Pharisee from a little on up. And he was, by his own words, he was a Pharisee of Pharisees. He knew the law. He knew what the Scripture said. He was an intelligent man. He was an educated man. And this whole concept of ministering to the Ephesians at the church of Ephesus, he was ministering to an environment that was idolatrous, that was heavily impacted by Greek philosophy and mythology and all of that kind of stuff. And there was a lot of dysfunctional marital relationships in that place. And yet, what did he use to try to paint a picture of Christ and the church to those early morning Christians and people that said, I believe that Jesus was the Son of God? He used marriage to paint the picture of the relationship between Christ and the church. The church being the bride and Christ being the groom, being the one that would receive his bride. So we could read through a lot of this and spend hours working with it, but I don't want to do that. I want to go towards the end of the chapter. I want to read the 31st verse. And he says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Now, the Apostle Paul was talking about more than that initial surge of attraction that we've all experienced. All of us that are married here today, we've all experienced that. There was a reason that he or she was attractive to us. There's a reason that we felt compelled to reach out to them, to allow our affections to go back and forth. And I'll venture today that it's not exactly like it was then. There's been some maturity. Those of you that's made it past the 50-year mark, the dimensions have changed. But there was something there, and we didn't have a clue about commitment. We didn't have a clue about reasons. Surely this whole idea that Paul is really talking about, he wasn't talking about that initial surge of attraction of wanting to be physically one flesh. All right? That's as far as I'm going to go with that, but I think you know what I'm talking about. When he says here, when they shall be joined, he says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. I want you to think about one flesh. At the risk of being criticized for being unpolitically correct, I would like to say that we have an expectation for a normal body. We think that there is such a thing as normal. And the normal thing is that our entire body would work in unison. I got a video of Matthew a few weeks ago at my house. And I've watched it two or three times. Not just because it's my grandson, but, well, that's part of it. But I can tell that he is developing motor skills. And you know what he's trying to do? He's trying to get his big toe in his mouth. Now, he's sitting on the couch, and I'd kind of set him by himself, and he's kind of sitting in the corner, and he's bent over, and he's got both hands around his foot, and he's trying to get his toe in his mouth. He's bent over, you know. It'd break me to do that today, but as he's bent over trying to get that big toe in his mouth, his big toe is twitching back and forth like this, and his foot is going like that, and you can tell that he's not knowing which way to pull his foot and which way for his wiggle his toe, and his little mouth is open, and his toe goes this way, and then his mouth goes the other way, and his toe is over here, and it's like, how do I get that thing in my mouth? He did once or twice there, but it's, now, not that I want to put my big toe in my mouth today, but if I did, I've got a lot better control over my motor skills, and he's just learning, you see. Now, if I was standing here today and you knew what was going through my mind and you knew that the top of my head it was itching, you wouldn't expect me to start down here somewheres and start working up like this to scratch the top of my head, would you? You would expect me to have enough dexterity to just reach up and scratch the top of my head. Well, we have an expectation of what it means for our bodies to function as one flesh. Okay? We're talking about making marriage last. One of the things that's a major problem in marriage is this one thing, this flesh operating as one flesh is not very functional. That's kind of like driving down the road and a wheel coming off your car. Well, that's a disaster, isn't it? I remember one time going down the road and a hubcap coming off. And anytime something like that comes off, it passes you up. It passed me up and went off out into a cotton field. This is years ago. I never did find my hubcap. But it wasn't functioning as one unit. This is where the number system and the operating system really comes in. It's like, how do we get on the same page? You know, it's important before you get married. And I know this is like maybe not the right audience to be speaking about this, but premarital counsel is wise. And it's even better to listen to it. It's wise to get premarital counsel. And it's better to listen, especially if there's some kind of constructive criticism. I remember my wife telling me that someone someone gave her some input about me. She said, how are you going to feel about a husband that comes home with grease under his fingernails every day? How are you going to deal with that? Are you going to be able to handle that? And I don't know if it was a new idea to her or not. If she thought maybe that I was going to scrub my fingernails perfectly clean before I came in the house every day. I haven't. And somehow she's managed. But it was good counsel for someone to give her. It was something that she needed to come to grips with. I had a different operating system, you see. We all have to come to a place that will recognize that operating as one flesh, these two, it says, shall be one flesh. Look for those places that you know you're not operating as one flesh. And ask God to help you know how to, I would use other terms and all, but learn how to make these two different number systems work together for a common cause. Help you, may God help us to find out how we can make these two different operating systems work for a common goal. You know, you can type up a document on a Mac computer, and you can also do it on a Windows-based computer. You can type a text message on an Apple phone, and you can type a text message on an Android operating system. And you can send them to one another, and you can read them. Now, there's, I won't go into all the differences because I don't know. But they operate different. You're going to have to, what's the end result? You wanted the document, didn't you? You wanted the message to get out. You want the unified effort needs to be portrayed. So I'm going to try to wind this up. I'm sorry, I'm being tedious this morning. The fourth thing, we talked about reason, we talked about commitment, we've talked a little bit about being one flesh. The fourth thing that's going to make a marriage last, and this is something that way too many people feel like they're going to try it without it. They might get the one flesh thing, and go to all types of council and say, oh, well, we both like hiking and we like the outdoors, and he likes to cook and I like to work on the car, and you know, we're just on the same path. We're just two peas in a pod. We're just made for one another. That one flesh thing that's going to be a piece of cake for us. Commitment, oh yeah, we got that. You know, we know how to do that. Reasons, oh yeah, we got good reasons for that. But we don't need this fourth thing, and I'm going to tell you, you're wrong. I remember one time doing some premarital counseling with someone that needed to be married. It was one of those situations, and I told them, I said, here's the thing. When you enter into marriage, I said, it's God's institution. And if you enter in and try to do it without having God in your life, you're going to have a problem, because immediately the devil's going to attack you. And they said, uh-huh, and nodded, and, you know, thought what I said was fine. And really what they wanted to know was, would I do the ceremony? And I did, and they did, and it didn't last. It was one of those deals. They'd lived together a number of years, and after they got married, it was just a few months, I think, maybe a year or two, and they were divorced. Why? They ought to know. I mean, they had children together. They knew how. They knew what they were getting into. Shouldn't have been a surprise that he had dirt under his fingernails or whatever it was. I don't know. The fourth thing is Jesus. I'd like to read a verse, a couple verses. St. John, the 14th chapter, and the 5th verse. Jesus is speaking to his disciples here after the Last Supper and before he was arrested. He says, Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? And Jesus said unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. So, I don't want to take it completely out of context, but I want to say this to us with the help of the Lord. When you can't figure out for the life of you how to make her understand that 6 is only 6, it's not 110, and you cannot get him to understand that it just don't work that way. His operating system is bad. You just, when it comes down to it, you're going to have to realize that Jesus is the one that says, I am the way. It is going to be the key to making the other three work. A reason. I'm going to tell you, I've heard some crazy reasons for a lot of different things in life. But a reason, where does it come from? It's in my head. It's something that was my idea. It's just a reason. And it's the thinnest. My mother made me some potato soup one time when I was really sick. And when she got done, I asked her, I said, Mama, where's the potatoes at? Surely we got enough money to buy a few potatoes. It was just soup with, I don't know if she used one potato for 2 gallons of soup or what it was, but there was just almost no potatoes in it. And that's what a reason is. It's so thin. It's in my head. Yes, we need them. We need commitment. We need to recognize that sometimes the reality is I swore to my own hurt. Commitment doesn't mean it. I'm committed and everything went right since I committed. No, there's going to be too many times that we feel like we committed to our own hurt. And we're going to be struggling. How on earth are we going to be one flesh in this situation? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I want you to take that with you. When it comes down to the point that you feel like I committed, swore to my own hurt, I don't see how I can ever understand where they're coming from, what they're operating on. They must, you know, somebody said somewhere that like men are from one planet and women are from another. I don't know what the planets are. Mars and Jupiter, I don't know. I don't know where they got that idea, but it's the same concept I'm trying to tell you today. There's going to be times it's like you're from a different world. Well, yeah, I mean, she's a woman. And I'm a man. But Jesus says, I am the way. I am the truth. This is what's going to make it work. We want to know how to make it last. We're going to have to work at it. You know, you don't get 50 years experience at anything without working at it. You don't get 50 years experience at being a dentist by not working at it. You go out of business if you don't work at it. So Lord, help us to be willing. I'm not saying this is comprehensive or all-inclusive. I just want us to think about, what does it take to make it last? And remember, Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, I'm the one that's going to make it all come together. I will help you. I will be there. And it is important for us to make it last. You pray for me.